Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
My favorite part of that whole segment yesterday was I've contended for a while that because my name starts that I don't, it doesn't sound like I'm ringing in fast enough. So I started ringing in with Steve, and Ireland at one point suggested he would start ringing in with John.
Yeah, we were going to try and turn that up. All right, so two thoughts on what happened yesterday. First of all, the fact that, Lindsay, do you not know what happened to the Americans in the 72 Olympics in basketball?
I kind of do.
What do you kind of think happened?
What do you kind of think happened?
That they lost.
No, they didn't lose. It was the biggest screw job in the history. Funches, do you know what happened?
Yeah, I do. Totally.
Okay, here's what happened.
Americans won the game, and somebody said, okay, no. That we blew a whistle, inadvertent whistle, give the Russians another chance. The Americans were up by one. So they give the ball to the Russians, and a horn goes off. And they say, no, a horn went off, and they're going to give them a third chance. And the Americans are like, no, we've won the game twice. This is over. They told the Americans, if you walk off now, it's a forfeit. So the Americans walk back in the court. The Russians throw it length of the court. One of their guys shoves our guy out of bounds, catches the ball, and lays it in, and they gave the Russians the gold medal.
Yep.
And to this day, the United States, I love this story. The United States, which includes Doug Collins, who, you know, we just saw Doug the other night in
Coach
the last
of the Bulls.
Chance. Doug was in this game on the 72 Olympic team. Not only have they never picked up their silver medals, but the guys who have died put it in their will that nobody in their estate is ever allowed to pick up their silver medal. They will not accept them. They will not acknowledge them. And as far as I'm concerned, Alan Sliwa is the Russians. That game was over. He changed the end three times until Mason finally won the game. I will never accept anything from Sliwa. He, as far as I'm concerned, he can take his silver medal and shove it.
So Sliwa is the Russians, and you're Isaiah Thomas.
No, I am the Americans in 1972, and the fact that Chris Morales doesn't know
then
that story.
Then I'm the Russians.
Yeah, you are. You needed three chances to win.
Yeah,
that game was over.
It's a very interesting. I mean, I'd love to go back to the tape. I just think it's petty, but I do believe I won that fair and square and straight.
Okay,
up.
So it's first 1-4. I was ahead 4-2. How did you win?
I hit three in a row.
Then how did I get to four?
You're the four was disputed. Three. I actually. Oh yeah, sure.
Disputed by who? You. That's it.
Disputed
by
me.
No, you asked Lindsay. She said, "Lindsay, is this in dispute?" And Lindsay said, "No, it's John's."
Lindsay, were you not in dispute?
I don't. I mean, we'll have to play the tape back once Alan comes on later because I think that.
Oh,
John
I don't even
like
know if I'll speak to Sliwa. He's the Russians. And he screwed me out of the gold medal. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm Doug Collins. He can take a silver medal and leave it in the safe deposit box.
Funch, you take that point and get the tape ready, and we'll play it for Sliwa. And let Ireland, you get complete say on it. Who won it and who didn't.
Okay.
All right. So a lot of people were concerned because we got news. And by the way, 877-710-ESPN. We can sneak in some calls. Hashtag Ask Mason in Ireland. Voicemail 530-ESPN-710. And you can email me direct, venicemace@gmail.com. We're giving you lots of ways to reach out to us during this weird and crazy and strange time. So a lot of people were concerned because we got news that Vin Scully – had taken a fall. And Vin is 90 now? Is Vin 90?
I think he's older than that. I think he's 91.
I think he's 92, I think, because I looked it up the other day.
And, you know, you worry about older people taking falls. But
that's
Vin
how
Scully,
Chick died. That's how Chick Hearn died.
Yeah, he's
Vin
92.
Scully released a statement today updating his health status. This is his message to Dodger fans.
Hi, everybody, and a very pleasant good evening to you. Wherever you may be, I know where I am now after 5 days in the hospital, and I'm so grateful to be home. And I also would like to thank all of you for your good wishes and prayers after I had my head first sliding accident. In case you care, I was called out. Anyway, the first responders for my troubles, and now I want to take time out to salute others, the first responders out there who are helping all of us during this unusual time. And to refer to it as an unusual time is really an upset. So, with that said, thanks again. I'm feeling better. Thanks for your good wishes. And remember, sooner or later, you're going to hear it. It'll be time for Dodger baseball.
Let me tell you the most amazing thing about that clip.
Yep.
He could still do a game.
Oh, of course he could.
He's 92.
Yeah, I mean, I'm never going to, first
92.
Of all, I'm never going to see 92. 92 is not in my life plan.
My oldest grandparent lived to be 90. My oldest of the four. They're all gone. The oldest one lived to be 90.
Yeah, my grandmother lived to be 91.
Didn't one of your grandfathers almost make 100?
No, my grandmother on my dad's side made 101. She made 101.
So you got a shot. You got a shot to make it into your 90s.
My great-grandma made it till like right after her 100th birthday. It's like she wanted to hit that 100.
Yeah. No, I don't. First of all, I won't be that sharp. I'm already not that sharp. Vin Scully may be sharper than me right now. He may be sharper than me at this exact moment, as you know if you listen to the show. Vin Scully gets, I make more mistakes in a day than any broadcaster probably in America. Would you say that's right, John?
You're in the running. I think there are others that make more mistakes than you, but you own it, which I give you full credit for.
Yeah, I mean, it's hand grenades for me. I mean, I'm trying to get close to the facts. You know, it's funny, as Juan is in the next room here in the show for the first time hearing, you know, my side of it, a lot. He's a little like Lisa. I don't think he listens very much.
We established yesterday that Lisa doesn't listen at all.
But the first thing he does after the show is tell me all the things I said wrong. He said, well, that wasn't true, and that story's made up, and I looked that up, and that's not right. I mean, it's basically just a report card on all the things I did and said wrong during the course of 3.5 hours. But it's good to know Vin Scully's okay.
Yeah, and
because that
Juan
makes
should
nervous.
Leave a voicemail.
What's that?
Juan should leave a voicemail and criticize you like everyone criticizes Ireland's pronunciations.
Yeah, Juan's not leaving a voicemail.
No, he's not playing our games.
Juan isn't even his real name. There's no way he's leaving a voicemail.
People are always very surprised when they meet Juan. They're like, huh. Not what I was expecting. Now, earlier today, we were talking to Herm Edwards, first of all, and talking a little bit about college football and the idea of college football and whether or not we've got a shot at seeing it this year. Laura Rutledge was on the Get Up this morning, and here she is with her latest update on the status of college football for 2020.
The timeline still remains the same, and the main focus is to try and have football that would start on time in college. It's just very complicated, as you alluded to. Most of these conferences are shut down currently, and they'll reassess at the end of this month, early June as well. And they're going to look around the country and say, where are we? Is it feasible to get these athletic players back on campus by July to have the 6 weeks that you might need to really be ready for the season to start on time? And I think that's crucial in all of this. Most universities are shut down over the summer. I've talked to many coaches. Some say, hey, we could do a model like the pros. We could just get guys back on campus and just go. Some say absolutely not. They say we would need the time in place to prepare everybody. And then one thing, too, that I continue to hear in all of this, it would be devastating for college football to try to play a season without fans. They need the fan revenue more than the NFL does, more than any other sport does. So they absolutely are going to try, no matter what the timeline looks like, to make sure that fans are in the stands, mainly for a financial situation. Also, they say, look, if it's not safe for fans, it should not be safe for players as well.
So, so much of the revenue from college football comes from people in the building.
Yeah, but I disagree with what she said at the end. I keep coming back to this, that if you listen to Dr. Fauci and if you listen to other medical experts, and I've been watching a lot of TV news lately, What they say is, well, Dr. Fauci and Sanjay Gupta and that boy, who was that guy on Bill Maher on Friday?
Maher was fantastic.
All right, so all these guys say that, you know, the difference between playing a sport with a controlled group of people and letting 50,000 fans into an arena or a stadium is significant. Here's why. There's going to be tons of testing. Any sports we see in the fall is going to involve testing. You can test a small control group, but it would be much harder. Let's say you play a college football game and you get 75 guys on each team.
Yep.
And God forbid you have a hiccup and somebody tests positive.
Sure.
Well, then you basically got to put those 150 kids into quarantine. All right. You can control a group of 150. It'd be incredibly difficult to control a group of 65,000. So, and this other theory that, well, if we're not having kids on campus, then we can't have college football. I've brought this up before, Mace. I went to UCLA. We start October 1st. All right. Every year since I've been, you know, I was a freshman in 1981. Every year we play four games before any kids are ever on campus. It happens all the time. So, you've got to be willing to bend. You've got to be willing to do things that you never would consider doing before. And if one of them is playing without fans, even in college football or even in baseball, where the gate is 81 home games a year, it would affect baseball more than any other sport. No fans at the gate. You got to consider it.
Would it consider how much of baseball? Because they've got gigantic television contracts. How much of baseball is the gate, and how much is
30%.
All those local deals and all those network deals?
I just read about this. 30% is gate, is attendance. 70% is TV and all the other revenue. So it's still worth playing a season with no fans.
Yeah. Here is Laura Rutledge on some schools being ready and others not being ready to open, and what happens then?
So I asked that question to a Power 5 head coach yesterday. What would this be like if, you know, some states are opening and all of that, just as you mentioned? He said, look, in our conference, we would be at the mercy of our slowest state. And a lot of that, I think, has to do with the fact that they are trying to keep things relatively unified here for the large can of worms, for lack of a better way to put it, that would be opened if some of these places start to open before others. And that's crucial in all of this, because Greeny, you'll remember when we first started talking about this, we were saying, could you see some conferences just play each other? Could you see some of these universities just open and allow their athletes to come back on campus? I think the NCAA and the conferences as a whole are really trying to avoid that. I'm not ruling it out, though, because it's still being floated around as a possibility. But I think they're trying to avoid something that would not be unified as a large body.
Yeah, that's the other thing is, what about some regions versus other regions? Some regions may be ready to go. Other regions may not. Weirdly, like, for example, the SEC, where states seem to be opening more quickly, could the SEC just play itself?
Well, I tend to, in any discussions like this, I tend to default to the medical guys. And what Dr. Fauci says is, and I think at the time he brought it up, he was talking about baseball. He said, you'd have to put everybody in a controlled environment. Now, what Laura is talking about, you're only as strong as your weakest state, is true if you're not going to do that controlled environment thing. And it's hard to get a bunch of college kids who are not being paid to go to a quarantine. For example, if you put all those kids in one city and tried to do like what they've talked about doing in the NBA and in basketball, can you do that to college kids who are not being paid? Can you sequester them for 6 weeks to play a conference season? I don't know if you can.
No, I don't think you can.
And so if you're going to assume that what Laura was talking about was, if one team can practice every day, like Dabo Swinney is convinced that in South Carolina he's going to be able to you know, open on time.
Well, and that state is opening up very quickly.
But maybe,
I mean, that's the thing. Some of these states are opening up very quickly. Like South Carolina, I think they're lifting everything.
So I'm trying to remember, what conference is Clemson in? They're in the ACC, right?
Yep.
Okay, so isn't Syracuse in the ACC, or did they
Syracuse
move around again?
Syracuse is in the ACC, right.
Okay, Syracuse is in New York. New York's the number one most affected state. if Syracuse can't practice, but Clemson can, you got to cancel that game, right?
Yeah, that game can't be played if it's at Syracuse,
right? Or even if it's at Clemson, because the Syracuse kids can't practice all week. But if Clemson's playing Florida State, and Florida is opening and everything's normal, and South Carolina is opening and everything, you can play that game. So remember, Mace, if you're a college football team, she was talking about gate. If you're a college football team, you only have 5 or 6 home games. You're only talking about 5 or 6 dates. In baseball, you're talking about 81 dates. My bottom line here is any of these seasons would be worth playing without fans. The hardest groups to play without fans are colleges, because you can't really quarantine the college kids in one environment when they're not being paid. You can't send every college team in the country to Florida and say, go live there for 12 weeks. It doesn't work.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, it's all going to be very confusing, because Georgia's open for business. Oklahoma's open for business. Alaska's open for business. South Carolina's open for business. Florida's open for business. Texas is open for business. They're just lifting everything. So how do you deal with that? Some of the states are going to lift it and some of the states aren't.
Right. So I would think the states that don't, those schools can't play. They got to forfeit. But the other schools could still play. For example, USC's got 12 games on their schedule. If they could play 8, that's still worth doing.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely worth playing. Absolutely. This is where it all gets tricky, and sadly, it gets political, which I friggin' can't stand. Somehow it's become this great political football, which it should be just science and data and all that stuff, but it's become politics, which is frustrating to me, because everything in this country seems to come down to politics. It shouldn't really be a political issue. I mean, I feel bad for, like, you know, friend of mine owns a, I'll say this. I have a bunch of friends that own movie theaters. Well, you know, I feel bad for them. I'm sure they want to reopen. I'm sure they want to figure out a way to get themselves open. And there's a big push-pull. Can we do it? Are we able to do it?
Yeah, I have a fast-track question about that for a state that's talking about doing it that I'll save for fast-track. But that's going on not just in the movie theater business, but in any business.
I was just talking to friends of mine who own small businesses. It's like, hey, you know,
if you're in a restaurant,
we're dying here.
You're probably about to go under.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, we're dying here. It's all really tricky. It's all really tricky. And it's going to take time to figure it out, and everybody's going to have to do it in their own timetable. That's what Newsom said today. Newsom said some cities in California are ready to start lifting, and he's not going to say don't. Because each one of those cities has their own mayor making decisions for their own constituents. So some cities are going to start opening in California. And it's hard to say which ones yet. But, I mean, even Garcetti says we're going to start to get there. He says, you know, in 2 weeks, things are going to lighten a little bit. So, I mean, all that stuff, I think all this stuff is, these are all really good signs. Life is moving towards normal at different speeds in different places, but moving towards normal. Coming up next, 877-710-ESPN. We've not taken any phone calls today. You can ring through right now. Hashtag Ask Mason and Ireland. Voicemail 530-ESPN-710. And you can send me an email direct at venicemace@gmail.com. Yeah, every time I do that, I almost give out my actual home email address. venicemace@gmail.com. Mason Ireland, 710 ESPN. And this portion of Mason in Ireland brought to you by Alignment Healthcare, changing healthcare one person at a time. So we came across nothing's better than a good wrong answer on Jeopardy. I love when they get them wrong, and they get them wrong in a monumental way. And we've got one of those from the other night. Funch, you have that?
Yeah, I do.
Zoo Winners for 2000. Take a look. Here, as on each September 24th, Zulus celebrate a holiday that was named in honor of this warrior leader of the early 1800s. Sarah.
Who is Shaka Khan?
No. Matt.
Who is Shaka Zulu?
Who is Chaka Khan?
Well, imagine how dumb that girl probably feels after saying that.
Who is Chaka
Although, have,
Khan?
Any, have either one of you ever played Jeopardy?
Well, there's. You mean
what you want to do is
show?
Well, no, just play with your friends. Like, play the home game or play the video game.
No, it's, never.
The key, the whole key is you want to buzz in as soon as Alex asks the question.
Yeah, because, we know from the way you play our games.
Yeah, because the way if you know the answer but you buzz in too late, you're dead. So it's okay missing a couple depending on how many. What the question's worth, like someone worth 100, 200. That sounded like kind of a harder one, but I'm surprised she said Chaka Khan.
Boy, you know, nothing divides America, and by America, I mean Los Angeles, like the Rams' new logo. Nothing does. So I tweeted out a picture today of me. I got my Rams gear. I got my Rams T-shirt now, and I got my Rams hat. And I tweeted it out, and it's got like 178 comments. Surprisingly, more good ones than I expected. Not a lot.
Do you have the D-head hat on?
The D. I don't like to call it that.
I know, but is that the one you have on?
Yeah, and the T-shirt. Both.
Oh, the hat has that same logo?
Yeah, hat and T-shirt have the same logo.
Okay, and so how many messages would you say you've received about it?
I have received 103 messages.
Okay. Percentage, just roughly guess. How many make reference to the phallic symbol?
I would say 35%.
Yeah, they got to change it.
35%?
My wife pointed out that once you know it's there, it's impossible to unsee. Now, your contention is you never noticed it in the first place.
Never notice it. Don't see it. I certainly don't see it every time I look at it. And I am of the belief that this is not changing. I don't believe it's changing. Somebody sent me.
It's interesting that you believe that.
Somebody sent me, and I don't know where exactly this came from, but somebody sent me the updated logo at midfield on the virtual venue. On the virtual venue.
So it's virtual of SoFi?
Yeah, virtual of SoFi. And let me see if I can tweet. Shoot. I'm going to retweet this guy again. I retweeted him once, but I'm going to retweet it again. It actually looks kind of cool. Look at it and see what you think. I think it looks kind of cool. Blow that up. It's got the shadow of the scoreboard that looks like a big ram's horn. And it's got the LA in the logos and the ram's horn at center field.
Have you sent it out yet?
Yeah, I just tweeted it. Okay. Just tweeted it out. And it actually if you look at the whole thing, it looks kind of cool. It looks kind of modern, looks kind of cool, looks kind of fresh. I like the way the scoreboard makes that gigantic ram's horn across everything. What are you laughing about?
You can't put that at the middle of the field.
Yeah, you absolutely can. You absolutely can.
Lindsay, have you seen it?
I'm trying to find it right now.
Yeah, I just tweeted.
You cannot put that right on the 50-yard line.
I think it's going to be dedicated to Eric Dickerson. I think they are going to dedicate.
They could put
that thing
they could
right
put
there.
ED inside the nose.
ED right in the middle of it. ED right in the middle of it.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
I think it looks great.
I'll tell you what, the seats look great.
The seats do look great.
What section are you in? Do you know?
I don't want to exactly
see. What are you talking about? You've been giving your seat location out for years.
Yeah, but it's my seat is a little
hoity-toity,
elitist.
Yeah, but that's okay. People know that you're not sitting in bad seats. What
I mean, are
you
in like the VIP section?
Are you in 1, 2, 3, or 4? What concourse are you on?
I am on concourse. Four. No, I'm sorry, two.
Two, yeah, two's where you want to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you're going to be right on top of the field. These are going to be great.
Yeah.
You're going to have a bird's eye view of that Rams head.
That Rams head looks great. I don't care what anybody says, that Rams head looks great. And by the way, there are more and more Rams fans have now switched their Twitter icon to that Rams head.
Mm-hmm.
That guy in particular switched it to that Rams head.
Which guy?
The guy that sent me that rendering, the 50-yard line rendering.
You sure it's not your burner account?
100%. My burner account is not Liberty at 12 ruminate. I don't know where these things come
from. He has on his Twitter heading, he has both logos. He has the LA and the Rams head.
Yes, he's all in. He is all in. And you keep saying they're going to change it. I think there is zero chance they're changing it.
Okay.
Zero.
I think they're just going to.
I would bet the farm on that.
I think they're going to. I think they're just going to change the nose.
I do not. There's too much merchandise out there.
Well, then it'll be collector's items.
They're selling this at the. It was on back order at the NFL store.
Maybe it's on back order because they stopped making it, and they're like planning on doing like a subtle and not telling anyone.
They made one for me. They just one shirt for
sure,
me.
Sure, some of could them be. Got out.
All right. Coming up next, and by the way, I'm not sure if this is real or not. It appears that NCAA softball has tweeted out.
No, it was Stanford Athletics tweeted it out.
Okay, and is that Ramona making a catch?
No, it's Jess Mendoza making a catch, and they say coming up next, like the next three batters that are coming up to hit. And Ramona is one of the three. And I'm having trouble figuring this out because Jess Mendoza played for Stanford and Ramona played for Cal. So if Jessica makes it the third out and they're running into the dugout, how can Ramona be coming up next? It would have had to be the second out, right?
Very good point.
We will bring Ramona on to explain next. And Ramona can help me with a very, very important buying decision that I'm making today.
Okay,
I will explain coming up. She has something that I'm considering buying.
Really?
And it's expensive.
Okay.
So we'll get into it.
That's coming up next for you. Momo is here. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. Oh, video that has been verified.
I told you.
They have officially released three short videos showing unidentified aerial phenomenon that had previously been released only by a private company. The video shows what appears to be two unidentified flying objects rapidly moving while being recorded by infrared cameras. Two of the videos contain service members reacting in awe at how quickly the objects are moving. One voice speculates it could be a drone. They are officially being categorized as UFOs by the Pentagon.
All right, so we welcome to the program Ramona Shelburne, and we have many things to get to with Momo. Momo, how are you holding up? How are things?
I'm good, but what was this UFO thing you're talking about?
Yeah,
The
Pentagon has confirmed that video that came out last month showing unidentified objects are officially UFOs. They have no idea what they are.
Isn't that the definition of a UFO? It's an unidentified flying object.
But normally they come out and say, "Oh yeah, but it was a weather balloon," or "Yeah, it was a drone." Or, yeah, it was. This time they're saying, "No, we don't know what the F it was. It's an actual UFO," which is exciting.
Exactly.
Yeah, that is exciting. Yeah.
Tomorrow's show, an interview with someone who saw the UFO. It'll be great. Now, Ramona, as you know, the internet is abuzz, and we're hoping that you will help us get to the bottom of it.
Okay.
There is video of you playing softball in college wearing red. And, of course, we know you went to Cal, whose colors are blue and gold.
It is so weird.
Was this some type of Valentine's Day game?
Or like a practical joke?
Or did someone Photoshop this picture of you? How do you explain
this?
Are you
colorblind? Is that possible?
Did you put on the wrong color jersey when you went to the play?
Right.
How do you explain it?
Well, as you know, I went to Cal
right.
a few times. Right? Uh-huh. A few times.
Yeah.
As a member of the Stanford softball team.
So you but think someone took the jersey, a photoshopped a jersey of one of the Stanford players and put it on you?
Yeah, and it's it was at the College World Series, I think, that game that you're looking at.
Well, yes, which makes it even harder to understand because Cal, there is no record of you of Cal winning the College World Series while you were there.
Yeah, well, actually, there is. Cal did win the College World Series.
Oh, that explains it. Okay, good.
Oh, okay, good, good.
Just not that one. Not the one that you're watching on that.
Got it.
I was concerned, but now that I know that Cal won the College World Series and this picture of you has been photoshopped, it all makes sense. Now, more importantly, Momo, I was sharing with Mace. I texted you about this earlier today, but your text was not very, you didn't give me a lot of info. So here's my dilemma.
Okay.
I am my wife for the 19th time has remodeled our house.
Okay, good.
And I need to get a big screen TV. I can fit.
How many TVs does one man need?
I have five, but this will be six. And this but Mace, this will be in the center of the house. Very important. I can fit. I can fit a 65-inch TV.
Oh,
yeah.
And so I called Isaac at Mirror Audio Video, like I always do. I buy all my TVs from Isaac. And he says, John, have I got the TV for you? It is fantastic. It is a Sony. It is the deepest contrast in blacks. It's spectacular. He says, as a matter of fact, ask Ramona. I set Ramona up with this TV, and she'll tell you all about it. So I text Ramona and I say, hey, tell me about the 65-inch TV you got from Isaac. Thinking about buying that model for our house. Do you like it? Two-word response. I do. That's it.
Point.
That's all you're giving me.
Point.
Come on. You got to give me something. So this is a lot of money, Momo. Although I'm getting,
I really, really like it. What else? I don't know. What do people say about TVs? It looks great.
I'm a guy. You gotta love it.
Is it amazing? Is it incredible?
It's amazing. I mean, like, what am I supposed to say?
Like, but you realize, a 65-inch TV is like for the average person listening right there. They're like, what the hell? I've got two TVs in my house. I've got like a 50-ish and a 40-ish. A 65-inch incredible.
I was very proud of you, Momo, when I found out you went that big.
Yeah, big. Well, here's the thing. I had this space in between this entertainment center that I bought, and it fit exactly that size, right? And my house has, like, high ceilings, so if you get a small TV, it looks really small.
Exactly.
And we had, like, a 40-something-inch TV in there before.
Hell no.
Like, really small compared to, like, the scale of the ceilings in that room, right? So it's like, I remember when we first moved into this house, like, we had, like, a queen-size bed, and, like, the ceiling is so high. Like, we walked in there, and I was like, I feel like I just went to, like, a doll's house because it's like, the bed looks so tiny in this room, right? Like, everybody shrunk the furniture. So you kind of had to, like, if you have high ceilings, you have to get furniture to match the scale. So I really like the TV. I got an Apple TV to go with it, which that was, like, a really big deal for me because now I get all the apps on there. I watch my Netflix, and I watch my Amazon Prime, and I do my workout videos on there. It's awesome. So I got it with Apple TV. That was a big
thing. All right. I will add that to the order. Excellent choice. All right.
Hey, breaking news.
Breaking news.
I ordered a 70-inch TV last night myself.
A 70-inch TV?
Yeah, you guys would be. You might
girl.
Be. Clearly, Mason, you haven't bought a TV in a while because you can actually buy a 65-inch TV for like $400, $300.
I just don't. I don't need it. My house isn't big enough.
I don't need it.
That I need a 65-inch TV.
Who needs a 65-inch TV? No, I don't think anybody really needs it. But like,
Lindsay, you do need. In my playroom, I have an 80.
Right. Ireland has got a gigantic room that is bigger than my whole kitchen and living room put together. Wouldn't you say, John?
Yeah, that's the Steve Sachs room where the mural of Steve Sachs playing baseball with the Three Stooges. But
so in that one, a gigantic TV does make sense. John's seat is literally, how far do you sit away from that? Like 20 feet away from that screen?
Yeah, 15 probably.
Yeah. I mean, that's how big his room is.
I can't. Like, I don't think an 80 would even it would just look ridiculous.
All right, but Ramona, I'm glad you like that. Now, more important things to get to, Momo. I read that you tweeted. You, of course, watched the first 8 episodes of The Last Dance so you could write previews of it. And you tweeted, and tell me if I have this right, if I hope I'm not screwing it up, that the next episode, episode 5, was your favorite of the 8.
Yep.
Why?
Okay, a couple of reasons. One, episode 5 is dedicated to Kobe Bryant. Okay, dedicated to him.
Okay.
The beginning, the first part of it is all about their relationship. And kind of, because 98, that was, 96 was Kobe's first year in the league. And they have, you know, footage of him at the All-Star game with Jordan. They have great interviews with Kobe and Michael and on and on and on. It's really cool. And to see like their real, that, you know, to see the beginnings of their relationship is great. And then I think there's a lot of stuff about the building of the Jordan brand. The commercialization and the backstory of the business of being Jordan, which I thought was really interesting. Because as we all know, Michael Jordan is, he's not just a millionaire. He's a multi-billionaire, right? I mean, he's like, his shoes are the highest selling shoes still. He owns Jordan brand. Like the way that he owned his image all the way back in the day was just groundbreaking. And I've had a chance to read some of the interviews that they did for this. I don't know if all of them made the documentary, but just reading some of the things that his agent said about how he set up Jordan's image. He compared it to like the Hope Diamond, right? Which is like basically every time you do a picture or you use the Hope Diamond somewhere or whatever it is, it dilutes the value of the brand. And so Michael was one of the only athletes who had control of his image. And if anybody ever tried to use Michael's image, like David Falk, his agent would always sue him and he would always win, because he would say every time Michael's image is used in some like, you know, unauthorized way in some like restaurant in Chicago or, you know, in an ad for something or wherever it's not supposed to be, it dilutes the value of his brand. And it's just like a really interesting episode. I think episode 5 is also where he talks about one of the more infamous stories about Michael, which is the Republicans buy Nike shoes story.
Yeah.
And he gives a really interesting answer and backstory on this. So I think 5 and 6, which are coming up this weekend, are like the two really strong episodes of this. I mean, they're all really good, but these ones have a lot in them.
So when do we get to the baseball part of it?
Is it 6 or 7?
It's not going to be
I'm
this
trying
coming
to remember.
Week.
It might be.
It will be if it's 6.
I'm trying to remember. I binge watched everything, so it's either 6 or 7. It's either this week or next week. But that part's really interesting too, guys. Like, super interesting. So I think I personally think, like, as good as the first 4 episodes are, I thought the documentary really hit its stride, like, in the middle. Like, from 5, 6, 7, and 8, which I've seen all 4 of, I think the second half is even stronger.
Nice.
Excellent.
It is like, absolutely fantastic.
I mean,
fantastic.
I was staying up way too late, like, watching these things, because I binged it, like, in 2 days. And I kept going, I gotta go to bed. Well, but I want to watch episode 6 now, you know, like, I just kept watching. I couldn't. That's why I don't remember which one is which, because I watched all of them so fast because they were so good.
Momo, the Lakers reached out to Mayor Eric Garcetti for a conversation. We don't exactly know. Do you have a sense for what that conversation might have been like?
So I think they've been in touch. I don't think it was one conversation, by the way. I think there's been ongoing conversations between the Lakers and conversations between the Lakers and, you know, the lady Barbara Ferrer, who's the LA County Commissioner of Public Health. She does a press conference every day around noon. If you tune into the local stations, you'll see her press conference every day. I know that they're probably texting and buddies now at this point, because they talk to her so much, right, in her office. Everything the Lakers have been doing, and this is, by the way, before the NBA even shut down, have been in communication with city officials and county officials. I think they're on, like, they were on first name basis a long time ago. They probably are talking every single day. And it's not just the Lakers. It would be the Lakers, the Clippers, the Dodgers, the Kings, all of the pro sports teams are in constant communication with the public officials because, you know, and it's very coordinated. I know there was a call this week, but I honestly think they talk, you know, several times a week since the beginning of March.
And do you have a sense for what the substance of those conversations are?
Yeah, it's essentially, first the conversations were, you guys are going to have to start shutting down pretty quickly. Like I know from, I want to say there was, let's say the NBA, was it a Thursday that they shut down? I think it was a Thursday. I think there was a call that Monday where I remember talking to a bunch of teams, like three or four of the teams I just mentioned, okay, who were on that call. And that's how I started getting wind of, oh, we're about to shut down. Like this is, and one of the things that people were talking about was when you have more than five instances of community transmission, five cases, then you have to cancel all events over 250. And they were at that place like the Monday before the season shut down. So I remember thinking and hearing that, and that's when I got really concerned. And I didn't go to the Brooklyn game. I remember that. That was a Tuesday night.
Yep.
I heard about that call. Things were getting really serious. Everybody was getting ready. Like the Warriors were getting ready to do a game without fans. You remember that?
Yep.
It was like literally if there was like one more case of community transmission, everything was about to shut down. And it was very like tense and it all happened very quickly, right? Nobody realized how fast this was going to happen. So those conversations now, they were called with the league. There's a guy named Dave Weiss who runs the NBA's programs on health and on what teams are supposed to be telling their staff and their players and everybody about what to do. So Dave Weiss is always talking to everybody. The league is coordinating everything. But the conversations right now are, if you were to reopen the practice facility, what would be the safest way to do it? They've gone over scenarios. They're getting best practices. They're getting things like, I saw Dave McMenamin's story today. He had a couple interesting, really, really interesting details. Like if somebody's rebounding the ball, they would have to be wearing rubber gloves. You see that, you know, like they,
wow.
Like if you have somebody working out one-on-one, it's wearing rubber. Like all of this stuff has been, that was one of the issues before. Remember when the season shut down, players were still coming in. And I remember somebody said to me, like, nobody talks, you know, there's no contact, but somebody's rebounding the ball. So I guess the ball is, you know, still a point of contact that everybody's touching. And I was like, yeah, you know, I mean, if somebody had it, you could pass it through the ball. If you're rebounding. So now they're talking about like whatever position coach or trainer would have to be wearing a mask and gloves. These are pretty serious type conversations, but I think that like, you know, you have to have them. You have to have protocols in place. And that's,
but Momo, how do you deal with the imbalance of things? Like, for example, Georgia's kind of opening and you would assume that the Atlanta facility is going to be open to players, whereas Staples Center or El Segundo is not going to open at the same time. Is it just going to be naturally unfair that some states are opening and some states aren't?
I think the NBA is trying to coordinate as best they can so that's mitigated a bit. I think there's going to be something that's a little, yeah, certain states like in Texas or Georgia or wherever where they're opening earlier. Yeah, that's an issue. But, the NBA pushed that back to May 8th. Did you notice that yesterday? They put a release out on that.
Yes, yes.
So they're trying to keep everybody on a similar time frame. And just because California has shut down doesn't mean the Lakers and Clippers won't be able to come in and work out at the same time as everybody else, right? Like, I think our stay-at-home order is through May 15th, so now there's just a week difference here. But there may be, if you keep it at a certain numbers level, if there's no more than X number of people in the building at any one time, I think in Dave's story, he said he heard it was four, four players at a time, like it's all scheduled and things like that. I think there's ways that they can do this, and especially if it's done in conjunction with the league and the public health officials. So there's ways to open back up here. It's just going to be done very, very cautiously and very, very slowly.
Steve Kerr today, Ramona, we're talking to Ramona Shelburne, said that he thinks his season's done. They're a non-playoff team. He said that he had a Zoom meeting earlier this week, and he felt like that was their season-ending meeting. He seemed to indicate that if the NBA comes back, they're going to just start up with the playoffs. Are you hearing that?
I've heard something like that, but it's a little different. Essentially, like, there's a sense that you can't just start just with, like, okay, whatever position you were in at that moment. There may be more like a play-in tournament for the last couple of spots. Like, that's an idea for floating around.
That gets Zion in New Orleans into the tournament. That gets Damian Lillard in Portland.
Like, maybe the last, you know, three or four teams have, four teams, let's say, they play, you know, two games, and whoever comes out of that, right? Like, it's just, you know, 7 plays 10 and, you know, 8 plays 9, and then the winners, maybe it's just, like, not even a tournament. Maybe it's just, like, literally 2 or 3 games like that. That would probably be the most fair way of doing it. This is more speculative, right? Like, I don't want to say this is what's going to happen, but that doesn't surprise me about Steve, that was the feeling he had, because I think there is this sense of, like, why are you bringing all of these other teams back that are really not in it? Like, what's the point? Just to play these games where you're not really even getting the gate? Like, it would really just be for local TV deals, I guess. That would be the only reason you would be doing that, to try to fulfill your TV obligations to your local broadcaster, or to just keep it kosher with the 82 games. And so that you could say you play at 82 games. I guess that's the only thing I can think of, but this is my opinion based on a lot of conversations. I think it's going to be more like a play-in tournament for the last couple seeds. And then I think that they're just really trying to get it to a place where they can have a playoff.
So UCLA had a major player, ooh, big prospect, decommit, and is now going straight to the G League as part of this new program that the NBA is running. This is starting to really have an impact. I mean, arguably, the number one and number two best recruits in the country are now going straight to the G League. Talk about that impact.
Yeah, I mean, I know that some colleges are not happy about this right now, because they were on board with the idea of guys, you know, if you're just really going to be a one and done player, if you're like the top five players in the class, like, that makes sense. But once a guy commits to a school, like, the G League was sort of supposed to leave them alone, you know, like, there wasn't supposed to be, you know, poaching from players who've already signed letters of intent and who were excited about playing there. And I think that the recruit, from what I read, he had given quotes about how excited he was to be going to UCLA. You know, that was a big deal for him. You know, with everything so unsettled financially, like, I mean, do you feel confident we're going to have a fall season? I don't. In college?
Yeah, you don't know.
I just don't know.
The thing that's tricky about college is you can't really ask these college players who are not being paid, they're not being compensated, to put their health at risk and go into and because of that, I think that it's a very slippery slope. But I'm not giving up on it, but I think it's trickier than it is with the NBA.
Yeah, and also, like, again, we don't have a vaccine for this. We don't. There are no assurances that the college basketball season is going to start and happen next year the way that, you know, you would assume it would, right?
Like, right.
So if you're committed to a college for next year, it's like you didn't even really get to finish high school, okay? I don't know that you're even going to have a college season next year. So what are you even going to college for?
Why not go make $500K?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, all right, Ramona.
I think that's why. Yeah, go ahead.
All right, no, last thing. I just sent you a picture on your phone. Did you get it?
Let me. I'm calling you on my other phone because my.
I knew you had a burner.
That your text,
so,
I know. Yeah. I have two phones.
Okay, so that is
burner phone.
That is a picture.
I'll go in and get the other one. Let's see.
Okay, so the picture I sent you is a picture Mason tweeted out about 20 minutes ago. It's of the Rams' new stadium. It's a virtual picture of what the stadium will look like. Now, I want you to zoom in to the middle of the field, the 50-yard line, and look at that Rams head logo and tell me, what do you see? What's the first thing you think of when you see that logo?
The first thing I think of?
Yeah.
I mean, I actually like the Rams head more than I like the new logo.
Right.
Right. Okay.
But that's it. You think it looks good?
Okay, it looks a little like Nightmare on Elm Street. Like, what's that? What's that? Not Nightmare on Elm Street. What's the animated version of that?
Right? Like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, no idea. But it
now, Eric,
looks like a like a ghost of a ram, you know?
Okay, so, right, right.
So Eric Dickerson says that he's hearing from fans says the face of that ram's head looks like a phallic symbol. And my wife says once you see that, you can't unsee it. Agree or disagree?
Okay, let me look closely. Okay. Well, I usually
And by the way, I use phallic symbol. Eric used the P word.
Of course.
Yeah.
Do I think? The face of it? Yeah. Okay, I see what you're talking about. Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay.
It doesn't bother me that bad.
That's it doesn't bother me either.
Okay.
No.
So I'm in the minority. We go ahead with the D-head logo right in the middle of the field.
call it that.
I mean, if you want to get like if you can kind of see that in a lot of things if you want to see it, right?
Yep, you can.
Also, Eric didn't like the new logo.
Well, that's the one he didn't like.
Anyway.
That's the logo he didn't like.
Well, he didn't like either. In fairness, he didn't like either one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Eric doesn't like
anything except for the he doesn't like anything. And maybe he likes the uniform he played in, but you know, which is what I kind of wish they would have just gone back to because I like those uniforms too, right?
All right, Momo, let's do some baby talk, shall we?
Yeah, okay.
How's baby Daniel? What's the very latest?
Oh boy, we've had a day, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Like he slept for 13 hours last night.
Wow, guys. Good for him.
And never amazing.
Oh,
right?
Man, like, am I jealous.
Never slept for 13 hours, but it made it so that he was not into taking a nap. And Nevin, who is an amazing dad, had the task of trying to get him down for a nap. And because I was doing a Zoom call with a friend's college class today, and that didn't go well, and then he threw up all over everything. So we've just been
poor guy.
You know, know. He's like, don't put me in the crib. I don't want to take a nap. So we're just kind of going to go napless today. And when you know the thing that I find works when he gets like crying and upset and not wanting to take a nap, Wheels on the Bus. Telling you, I can get 12 versions of Wheels on the Bus. It's just like we have Noah's Ark on the bus. It's like we just keep singing it, and every time I sing it, like he starts dancing and he snaps out of whatever tantrum having.
Ramona, how many? Because Mason's never had kids. How many noises
I know of?
Okay, how many noises from Wheel on the Bus can do you think Mason can identify? I'll set the over under at 2. Do you think he can identify more than 2?
No.
Okay, so okay. Mace, the wheels on the bus go round and round. The wipers on the bus go...
Whoosh, whoosh, whoosh.
No.
Oh, it's swish, swish, swish.
It's swish, swish, swish. Do we get that?
Pretty close.
Enough.
All right, Ramona, what other ones would he have the best chance of knowing?
Oh, best chance? Am I going to try to help him or not? Can I give him an easy one or a hard one? Okay.
Give me easy.
The blinkers on the bus go...
Blink, blink, blink.
There you go. The engine on the bus goes...
Vroom, vroom, vroom.
Yes!
You know more than you're leading on.
The driver on the bus says...
Pay me now.
Move on back. Okay, move on back.
I kind of like pay me now. It's a public bus.
That's good, yeah. But, I mean, I'm telling you, when you do Wheels on the Bus, you do it over and over and over.
The driver
and
on the bus says, sit your ass down.
Okay, the doors on the bus go.
Slam, slam, slam.
Shut. No, open and shut.
Open and shut.
I like slam, slam, slam.
Yeah, that's good too. But so I'm telling you, but I get down to the point where I'm like, the baseball players on the bus say, put me in, coach. I mean, I just start making things up because I get tired of saying swish, swish, swish. And it's amazing, like, this kid can go in from so upset he's crying and makes himself throw up and he's mad about everything to, like, singing Wheels on the Bus with me. It's like the cure-all.
That's fantastic. Well, listen, Momo, we appreciate – Momo's a wonderful mom, and she always comes on and talks about little Daniel.
Yeah.
And this is sponsored by First 5. Your baby's brain doesn't require fancy toys or videos. Talking, reading, and singing. Wheels on the Bus are the tools you need. Talk, read, sing. It changes everything. To learn more, visit first5california.com. Hey, Momo, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Momo.
I wish all of you 13 hours of sleep tonight. I think our whole lives will be just
so unbelievable.
So good. All right. Coming up next for you is 5 o'clock Fast Track. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN.